Happy Monday. It is the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy. Happy new week to you, Blake. Yeah, you worked on Saturday. Man, we'll get into that Raptors game a little bit later on in the program. It's a big Toronto sports weekend. We'll obviously get to the Argos as well, as Toronto is the city of champions. Argos have won their last seven appearances in the Grey Cup game. But that Raptors game on Saturday was thrilling. It was encouraging. And then it was also heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was a tough one. You lose in overtime to a pretty good Hawks team, a Hawks team I'm not like a huge believer in long term, as far as, you know, once we get to the playoffs and stuff. But a team that's very, very good night to night, a team that, you know, that Trae Young, Clint Capella duo is clicking right now. And DeAndre Hunter had a great game. So for you to be down seven guys and take that team to overtime, and not just like when we say down seven guys, we're not talking about like, oh, Ron Harper was out and Kem Birch was out. And no disrespect to those two guys. Like, Kem Birch played in that game and Ron Harper Jr. was up for depth. But you were missing six rotation pieces, like six guys you figured heading into the season would play for you every night. And that kind of injury situation has a cascading effect where, you know, in this case, it was, well, they're going to play a seven-man rotation and Malachi Flynn and Christian Kloker are going to have huge roles. Anyway, to even be there in overtime said a lot about the performance that Scottie Barnes had throughout that game. Not the most efficient game, but 28-11-9. A lot more of the aggression you and I talked about last week of, hey, what's not clicking for Barnes with Siakam out? And it was that kind of forcefulness. And I thought as a playmaker at both ends of the floor, he was really the only reason that game went to overtime and they were really in it. Like, well, he was the only guy to have a good game, but he was pretty dominant.
That is true. He was the only reason that game went to overtime, because he played so well and also because he missed two bunnies at the buzzer.
Yes. And then he's also the reason it didn't go to double overtime.
Right.
Because that final play at the buzzer, tiny bit of a botch job there on the last second play. Still not entirely sure what the thinking was there on that mistake. And, you know, the trickle down of someone tries to make up for that mistake and that leaves AJ Griffin wide open under the bucket. But hey, you learn, right?
You live and you learn. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later on in the program. But today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota, your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin, north of Steeles, is, I mentioned it, we live in the city of champions. Raptors won the NBA title in 2019, and the Argos are Grey Cup champions, knocking off the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in a rematch of the 1950 Mud Bowl. Argos.
You love that Mud Bowl reference.
Because, yeah, it's CFL history, and we relived it in Regina yesterday. Donovan Bennett, in studio, host of Going Deep with Donovan Bennett. So that was kind of a rematch of the regular season matchup between these two teams, right? Like, that was a one-point game. We had late dramatics. We're going to have Chad Kelly on the program later on as well, which I'm excited about. But you lose your potential most outstanding player in the CFL quarterback in the second half. You're trailing, and your backup quarterback leads you to victory.
There was a lot of things.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a dud game to start, let's be honest. People were saying instant classic, maybe instant classic finish. But I think these two teams were relatively close. Like, they've played each other close throughout the year. They played each other close throughout this Blue Bombers run. Maybe not in terms of outcome, but in terms of when you put on the tape. And that's one of the things, is physically, can you match up, right? Because if you can't, then there's nothing to talk about. And the Argos are one of the teams along the line of scrimmage where they could match up. And eventually we saw them get back in the game because of that front seven defensively. I'm kind of filibustering. I can't remember what you asked me, but
he didn't ask you the point. Yeah. He just kind of set you up for how you feeling, man.
Well, this is like our Grey Cup preview. Yeah. Our Grey Cup preview was, hey, Donovan, talk about the Argos in the Grey Cup game.
I'm like maybe too much old school journalism guy, like in a millennial's body.
I'm not interviewing you, right? No, like, we're just having a discussion.
Okay, don't feel attacked. I'm not attacking. I'm just trying to make a point.
Attacked.
But, and Blake, you have been, probably not anymore, because essentially you're West Indian, you have four jobs, but you have been in a lot of scrums. There is the
Are you
person.
Say, talk about?
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, I don't
it's
do
just
talk
a,
about.
It's just the, like,
Guess what I'm not going to do when Chad Kelly comes on? I'm going to say, talk about the game, Chad. No, I'm going to ask him questions. I figured you, radio professional, on the radio station earlier, has his own show that we could just have a conversation.
Why are you so defensive? I'm talking to the audience, and I'm just telling them that I hate talking about. I'm not talking about you. I'm not talking about you.
Sure you're not.
Anyways.
Okay, can I get this back on the rails?
Please.
All right. So first, your comment about it not being an instant classic, maybe just an instant closing. Maybe if we got that game sped up where there was no pre-game or halftime show, maybe it would get back into the classic territory that wasn't the best. Got to ask you, though, Donovan, I know that you're an all-sports guy. When the Jays got knocked out in the wild card last year, I heard a lot of, typical Toronto sports, because the Leafs had been knocked out a million times in a row in the first round. But the Raptors just won a championship in 2019. 100%. We're not far off TFC, and now you've got the Toronto Argos winning the Grey Cup. How are we simultaneously the city of champions and the city of chokers?
Larry Tannenbaum, all he does is win.
Make it make sense to me.
The National Hockey League.
Yeah, it's one choker team. That the city is not a choker city anymore, really. It's hard to argue.
I mean, certainly Boston, right? They've had a great run.
Yeah.
But in our lives, I've seen a lot of parades in multiple sports. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Jays 92-93. You know, TFC of late has been competitive. Certainly, it was ugly to start the franchise. And the Argos, as you guys have mentioned, different generations, different QBs, different head coaches, different GMs. Same result when they get to the Grey Cup in our lifetime. So, yeah, and I think that knock is overblown because, like, we know what it is. There's one team that takes all the oxygen out of the room, and it's the Buds. It's TML forever. Yeah. And that's why you have this overarching feeling that there's an anvil that's about to drop all the time, because that's true of that team.
Yeah.
So in terms of the winning side of things, now let's ignore the Leafs for the rest of this segment.
Happy to.
The winning side of things, this is, as Ben mentioned off the top, 7-0 for the Argos when they get there. Also 7-0, I believe, for Pinball Clemens across player, coach, executive.
Yeah. Work.
Where does Pinball Clemens' legacy as a winner now stand? I not that 6-0 wasn't good, but it's pretty remarkable to see that put up on the screen. 7-0
now as a GM
across three different roles. Yeah.
Well, and I would argue that those Flutie Argos teams are in the conversation with Relax, province of Alberta, with the Great Warren Moon Elks teams. Can you call them Elks retroactively if they weren't the Elks at the time?
We would just call them Edmonton?
The Edmonton franchise teams.
Sure.
But Pinball, I mean, he's the ultimate winner in life. He has many business ventures that nobody knows about that are super successful. He's obviously very philanthropic, and his charity has done great work.
Then why is he in such a bad mood all the time?
Oh, my God. I actually, you know what? I saw him, and I was greeted with, yes! All right. Yeah, if he was here, Blake, love the X's, and I love the O's. Your analysis, spot on, man. Just love it. Yes. Ben, every time slot, you're the best.
Yeah.
Love you, Ben. Yeah. And Oakville.
Yeah.
Where's a better place than where we live in Oakville, Ben?
I don't live there anymore, but yeah.
You don't,
Burlington now.
Oh, same difference.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyways, he just makes you smile, makes you feel good. And, like, Pinball, key level recruiter. Like, if we want to talk about how they got this done, look at the backfield and Andrew Harris, who got on the phone to get him. Another Hall of Fame running back in Pinball Clemens. Speedy B, who got on the phone to get him. Another great returner and, diminutive playmaker in Pinball. And then obviously they got Jagera Davis. But like Pinball essentially was like, come win with the winners. And he is a winner. So, yeah, I think his legacy, certainly in what he's done in Canadian football and with the Argos, is unmatched.
Another person that Pinball brought in, and it looked like maybe it wasn't really going to matter all that much. It was just kind of a fun side story. And then all of a sudden, Chad Kelly is playing a huge role in this game. You know, the story kind of being this year that he was going to try to go through the CFL to work his way back to the NFL, started one game at the end of the season that didn't really matter, and then has the play of and the drive of the Grey Cup. What do you make of where Chad Kelly's at here at the end of his kind of bet on yourself in the CFL year?
Well, to level set for those who don't follow the CFL often, there are often players from major Power 5 conferences, quarterbacks who have come to the CFL and not done well, and quite frankly, haven't stuck around long enough to figure it out and do well. most recent example, Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, right? You can't find a QB, I mean, maybe Tim Tebow, that had a better collegiate resume than Manziel. And I would argue whose skill set transferred better to the CFL game. Like Johnny Manziel was a millennial version of Doug Flutie. Chad Kelly is that, but with 35 pounds. And so that's why, I mean, I'm actually going to give love to consultant to the front office camera, what his actual title is, but Jim Barker, essentially the one in the room who's like doing the GM things when Pinball is running around hugging everybody. He is the one who's like, Chad Kelly in this league could be special. And he was super excited to be here and was tweeting a storm when the Argos got his rights. And so now what has happened with the drive to keep them alive and the drive to win it is we were going to have this musical chairs of QB mediocrity, essentially, throughout the league, depending on what happens with Nathan Rourke if he goes down south. And now Chad Kelly has entered the chat in terms of there's real belief, and I'm not sure if the way the game end helps or hurts this, that McLeod Bethel Thompson was going to walk away after this year's.
Yeah, his partner is like some big TV star, or she writes television. What's the deal there?
I believe she works for Marvel.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. You know.
Which superhero is she?
I do not know. But also, you know, family is in Georgia. There's, you know, the separation, obviously, you know. I still think a guy who just finally found his rhythm as a starter and given a team, like, is he going to walk away from that so quickly? But, you know, the decision matrix is different for different people. But that was going to create potentially an opening in Toronto, one less name on that board. You know, people have seen the link between potentially Bo Levi Mitchell in Toronto, given that they were willing to risk it all and throw him a bag the last time he was a free agent. And half of their front office and wide receiving core came from Calgary. But I think Chad Kelly has said, whether here or elsewhere, I mean, I don't know if it's enough tape to say in the NFL, he's potentially a viable starter in the league, which makes the offseason fascinating. But he is a guy who, myself included, Argos fans were calling for all year because it has been a hot and cold relationship with McLeod Bethel Thompson until the postseason when he finally found some consistency in his game. They wanted to at least see some Chad Kelly because you know he's got the pedigree. Well, they saw some of him when it mattered, and he looked pretty damn good.
Well, I mean, he had one incredible scramble, right, and a huge point in the game, and they're down 6 points on a 2nd and 15, and he looked great. And yeah, he brought the team back to win the freaking Grey Cup.
The best quarterback on the field yesterday was Chad Kelly.
Yeah, and Zach Galeros was obviously banged up, and I don't know if we saw the best version of him yesterday either way, but it's besides the point. Yeah, you're right. The pedigree's there, and he's not yet 30, right? Like, I've seen two things. I've seen him before the season talk about throwing for like 6,000 yards yes, in this league, right? Yes. And I've also seen him, like, the whole point of this is to get back to the United States, to get back onto an NFL roster where he once resided and started his career as Mr. Irrelevant for the Denver Broncos. So it'll be interesting. Like, that's the line of questioning we're going to ask Chad, who has a very interesting, not just career, but life and things not dissimilar to Johnny Football that have maybe detracted from his on-field play, some of the off-the-field stuff. And if he's over that, how much of the story is that for him?
But no question.
And you know what? This is maybe to wrap it all up, because you mentioned Nathan Rourke. He's a guy that we've kind of talked about recently, too, because an interesting possibility exists with him either becoming the face of this league or catching on to a roster south of the border and maybe being a star. I mean,
don't forget the XFL comes back next year, too, and that was kind of their thing first time around, was grab the exciting quarterbacks who are just a level below the NFL.
Yeah. So, I mean, Chad Kelly, not to mention the last name, too, and sure, being related to Jim Kelly, being the nephew there. Like, how important is he to the future of this sport? Because this is also what I want to talk to you about. Because I know we're talking about the Argos and the game and the Grey Cup and being 7-0 in their last Grey Cup games, and that's all well and good, and I do want to talk about that. But it's hard, being the sports fan that I am, that Blake is, that I think a lot of people that are listening to us are, that are not day-to-day followers of this team. And, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's fallen on hard times in recent years, especially after missing a year after the pandemic. I mean, I wonder how crucial Chad Kelly might be to, not the resurrection of the Argos. Like, nobody thinks the Argos are going to be back to competing with the Leafs and, well, the Raptors weren't around in their heyday, but that they could be back, you know, somewhere where TFC is, back to some level of relevance. Because, frankly, when they're not playing the Grey Cup, it's pretty close.
So that time you did ask me a question. I will answer.
It was a long question, and it was kind of like there was other things in there. But you parsed it, right?
It was a bunkus question, but we got there.
That's rude.
I will answer it, but I will say this about Chad Kelly. Maybe you can bring it up when you guys have him on. In terms of the football character, everything that you've heard about him was he's A1. He was essentially the only backup this year who didn't get extensive playing time outside of short yardage throughout the season and didn't get extensive reps in practice, didn't complain about it, was the happiest guy on the team, stayed ready for his moment. But the Argos have this thing on the back of the plane after they win called Club Dub, where they turn up for IG Lives, if you are interested. He was always the biggest factor in Club Dub. Super fun, super celebrating with like a bunch of like American D linemen and stuff, doing all of the TikTok dances that I don't know how to do. But he was all invested in the team, even though he wasn't getting the 6,000-yard experience that he thought. So a lot of people, who maybe questioned his motivations coming here, he checked out as being a team guy and it worked out. Now, in terms of him bringing, some excitement, some intrigue, some eyeballs, some impressions, to the team, this is a franchise that had Ricky Williams in like some version of his, pot smoking prime. And it didn't move the needle in terms of the game. I mean, you could go farther than that to Rocket Ishmael again,
but that was a big deal.
It was a big deal that he just chose to sign here, but it did not provide stability in terms of sustained success. And so, look, well after Jermaine Defoe or Giovinco were no longer coming out of the tunnel at BMO, people were still getting season tickets. People were still interested in watching the product live. Now, I would argue that the TV numbers are not great. And when everyone makes the comparison to MLS and the CFL, I say, well, sure. What it looks like on field and in the gate, that's one thing. But if the CFL had the MLS's TV numbers, they would be, beside themselves. So the Argos still rate very high relative to other CFL franchise in terms of ratings. The question is, how do you actually motivate those fans that are there to get on a GO train and go watch a game? And I think that has been the problem. I don't know if Chad Kelly alone is going to be able to solve that.
Yeah, I don't know either, because you're right. Yeah. Ricky Williams was obviously a big star when he arrived here. He wasn't a huge part of those Argos teams either. And no. Chad Kelly as a starting quarterback would be a huge part of it. I think it probably goes beyond, you're right, the play on the field. You don't want to see a team lose 50-0 every night, but it's about the in-stadium experience.
I think it's not the first thing you said, the play on the field. I mean, that helps. But I think it's the in-stadium experience. Blake, how many Raptors teams were terrible, and yet it took a while for the attendance to start to dwindle? And not even like to a bad spot. I'm talking about like middle of the road NBA spot.
No, it made it. Once they were bad for a certain number of years, you were like, "Oh, Sprite Zone prices are back."
Yes,
that's all it was. It's like, "Oh, good, they're bad this year. I can afford to go to a couple games." And now I think it was only right before the pandemic that they lost that extended sellout streak, where not only the excitement on the way up, but it took a little while then too for people to be like, "We saw a title. We saw the way up. We don't have to be at every single game." It takes a long time. And I don't think the Raptors are ever going back to that either.
No. And then we're talking about multiple stars, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, people would buy tickets to see Vince Carter. But whether it was DeMar not being here, Kawhi coming and going, obviously Kyle leaving, people go for the experience of being in a Raptors game. Super inclusive, great music. The team's going to try hard. You might see Drake. But it's going to be a fun date night. It's going to be the pre-drink to your night in King West or on Ossington.
That's why I view this league, that plays Friday nights. The idea that you could have like the Argos game as like a precursor to your night out on the town in the summer, that seems like a realistic possibility. If the price is right, you could turn it into a hotspot.
You'd have to build it and promote that. Like, one thing that TFC has is you have a brand affinity, and thus you can have a brand loyalty. Mm-hmm. I know when I go, the ultras are going to be in the supporting section singing and dancing and chanting the entire time. I know there's going to be spots in the stadium where I can get my IG on and show off my scarf, right? There is an experience to it. You can walk from Liberty, have a drink, have a pint beforehand, walk back. I don't know if there's the same understanding of what the experience of going to an Argo game is like. And you have to build that for people to come.
Which is a little... It's a little conflicting because, you know, when the Toronto Wolfpack were here, and it's not a great example because they're not really here now. And you know, there were a lot of reasons for that, including the timing of the pandemic and the difficulty of being a cross-Atlantic rugby squad. But they had a pretty consistent attendance at those games with a very clear identity, and that was come here, have a couple drinks in the sun on a Saturday afternoon, and then
like
go on with your weekend. And, like, I would have friends come into town. It's like, yeah, we're doing this later, but we're coming in early to go to the Wolfpack game. And you know, I think that they do that well. TFC obviously does that well. Like, you see what all of Liberty Village looks like on a big TFC night, and it's just red everywhere. And those, you know, those bars around there are bumping. So I don't know what the Argos could do short of, do we finally get some allowance for tailgating in that big kind of Enercare parking lot there? I don't really know what it looks like, but there is a way to do it. Like, other, and maybe not at 30,000 people scale, but at like a 12,000 diehard scale, I think you could pull that off.
Well, I think the answer is not one or the other in this multiple choice. It's all of the above, right? These things are not mutually exclusive. It was for a long time. Rogers Center is archaic. It's not built for football. We need grass. We need an outdoor stadium. BMO was supposed to be the fix-all. It wasn't that. You moved into BMO. To start, they had, like, you know, friendly tailgating. Like, you could buy beer from us and drink it over there. Not true, you know, bring your own table and smash it tailgating. You know, that wasn't it. In terms of, you know, spending money on the on-field product, that necessarily wasn't it. Being attached to MLSC and having, you know, their marketing arm, that hasn't been it. So I think it's got to be a holistic approach. Look at BC, at what they've done. New ownership and Omar Doman, you know, have said, what does the fan base want? They want to congregate. They want to be together. Gave them, you know, some cool concerts just outside the stadium. Built a little bit of a beer garden outside. Made it fun. I mean, also, I don't want to say lucked in because they drafted him, but, you know, kind of fell into a transformational player that happened to be Canadian, and Nathan Rourke, who played a real, you know, fun style to watch. All those things meant that their season tickets went up. But still, you had some highs and then some kind of lows. They're going to have to build it over time, but it's showing that you can do it. Same thing with the new ownership in Montreal. The thought that it doesn't work in big cities, I don't think is true. I think the thought is you've got more competition now. You have MLS now in all of those cities the way you didn't when we were kids. You've got Raptors 905, and you've got, you know, CBL. You've got all of these other things at around the same price point that people can do with disposable income. So you have to fight harder for our attention.
Yeah, and it requires some creativity. And like you said, fighting for that attention. I think BC is a great example. You know, I lived out there like a decade ago, and the games were bland. It was a big empty arena, and like even for playoff games, it was pretty mediocre. And like, I haven't been there since, but I see the, you know, the videos pregame or whatever of what that looks like. I think Ottawa is another good example where I don't know what their, you know, financial stability is like, but that's a great place to watch a game. Like the way that they've mixed in trying to jam a lot of people in there and having a lot of common areas to, you know, stand and have a beer and, hey, we're going to watch this part of the game from the corner of the end zone and then go back to our seats or whatever. I think they've done a good job of that. My last idea, just in the spirit of the Argonauts name, and because I saw people suggesting this, our pal Dan Shulman called that the annual basketball game that takes place on the ship.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw a lot of people being like, oh, it would be cool to try this for football. Well, what if the Argonauts played on a floating stadium,
like on a barge?
Yeah,
and everybody gets on, and then it's like, and then it's trolled out to the middle of Lake Ontario. I like it. I like it a lot.
I'm an idiot. You can say.
I see, like, you know, objections.
Please do. You yelled at me. Yell at him. He asked if the Argos could play on a barge in the middle of the lake.
Objectionable conduct. You hit him into the water. Would be a first. I mean, yeah, imagine like coin flip, we want to take the wind. Well, it's all wind. Like,
yes. Yeah, it'd be tough to
we want to take the shallow end. Yeah.
You know, lead with Chad Kelly with that one. See how he's feeling about it.
I'll save that for Blake. All right, that was today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. Before you go, I do want to revisit the conversation that we had. Actually, you were in without Blake because he was off being a big shot on TV. But we talked before the start of the World Cup about this sports washing thing. And I just, you know, did a quick little rundown of the things we've already experienced so far in this World Cup. As day two is now in the books, four matches into the World Cup. We've had a match fixing accusation, which turned out not to be true at all. In fact, it was one of the most lopsided losses a host nation has ever suffered. I don't know if you guys saw Grant Wall today, but yeah, he's a huge soccer reporter based in the United States, one of the biggest North American soccer reporters, was initially denied entry into a stadium because his shirt had a rainbow on it. He eventually got in. The One Love armband that so many European nations were going to wear to, I guess, speak out against the horrible totalitarian human rights record regime that is happening in Qatar. They backed off of that because they were going to be sanctioned with yellow cards. And now Belgium has been asked to remove the word love from
too controversial
their kits. Like love. Not one love, just love. So how's it going?
Like, can we put like? Is like okay?
So let's revisit our conversation. And my contention was that this whole sports washing thing, trying to normalize countries that are not normal, it has the opposite effect that now we're talking about these things that I think most people, if the World Cup was not held in Qatar, would probably not know about. And I think it's kind of played out that way through 2 days.
Oh, Ben, how naive you are. It hasn't had the opposite effect because success is relative to what your expectations are. And in the FIFA president, Gianni Infantino's hour-long sermon.
Oh, that was something.
Yeah. Where he described being a migrant worker and disabled and gay as if
these are woman.
And did he say woman? I missed that one.
He's also Qatari.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. That's right. Yeah. As if these are masks that you can just put on. But he knows what it's like because when he was young, he was bullied for having freckles and red hair. As if that equates being gay in a country, which means you are either thrown in jail or stoned to death and thrown in a locker because you have freckles. Same. In that diatribe, he mentioned, breaking news, North Korea is actually where I want to take one of our future games. So, like, no, like, this is ultimately, this is what we know. That FIFA stands to make $1 billion more than the next most profitable World Cup in Qatar. That Qatar is trying to be the new Dubai. That is what Doha is set up to be. Even though they had to build 8 stadiums and literally build a city to host the games because Qatar is smaller than Nova Scotia, they want travel and industry and influence. There is a real Housewives of Dubai, as I think we've talked about.
Yeah.
They want to be next up in terms of the open, cool travel spot for business in the Western world, in Europe. And if FIFA is going to continue to bring World Cups to places that really don't care about what the rest of the world thinks other than using it as promotion, then we're going to continue to see this happen. Fox, who's broadcasting the games in the United States, has said, we are not going to talk about any of the off-field issues. This is going to be real tough now because they're coming fast and furious. But you know who's sponsoring Fox's FIFA World Cup broadcast? Qatari Airways. Mm-hmm. You know who runs Qatari Airways? It's not like it's Air Canada or WestJet where it's a different separate company from the government. The Qatari government runs Qatari Airways. So they're essentially paying for a couple-week promotion with aerial shots of their country. Mm. And, yeah, we have issue, but we see this through the lens of growing up in this culture. After Infantino's ridiculous press conference, you know what happened in that room? A bunch of journalists from Europe and the United States were exhausted and didn't even know, like, which ridiculous thing should we ask questions about? But Arab journalists got up and gave him an ovation.
Yeah.
So this is being seen entirely different. And he is up for a re-election. He is saying to the emirs and the Supreme Committee and any other country who wants to do business the same way, I'm your guy. So no, I don't actually think that this is not working out. They're getting everything they want. No beer, even though Budweiser paid $75 million? Mm. Yeah, cool. We got you. No armband, even though, like, gay rights groups even said that armband didn't go far enough.
Right.
Because it was kind of just, like, a heart and some colors, but not in any semblance that meant anything. Yeah, fine, sure. We'll give cards for that. They're getting everything they want. So I don't actually think this experiment in their eyes is bad. They're chalking this up to racism, and if that's how they want to sleep at night, that's fine. But I would say they would say they are getting great value on their dollar.
I guess. Look, as long as the check's clear, I could see FIFA looking at this and being like, well, it didn't hurt viewership, right, and the players were still as excited, and, you know, what's to stop the next one? You know, there are other places that would pay a lot of money to host, and as part of that hosting, have the kind of free PR arm. It's what WWE does in Saudi Arabia with their biannual events. It's like, that's mostly a PR buy, not an event buy. I think you'd have a couple countries lining up.
But the point is, the checks clearing, the checks being, like any business, bigger and bigger year over year. And I don't actually think there are a lot of countries anymore who are lining up to host Olympics and to host World Cups, because we've seen over time, ask people who live in Montreal, it's not a great investment, which is why when the World Cup here comes here, it took an entire continent to host the thing.
Yep.
So the countries who are willing to spend more are the countries where the return on investment doesn't matter, because it's
not... Well, the citizens don't have any say.
Exactly. Yeah. Where's my tax dollar going to? Yeah. Do you want to go in jail or not?
Yeah. Well, ain't that the truth?
There was a happy conclusion to the Budweiser thing, though. I drank them all on the weekend. All $75 million worth of beers. I did it.
Congratulations.
I saved the World Cup.
Yes.
Man, you are a superhero. Donovan, thanks for this, man.
Anytime.
There's Donovan Bennett, host of Going Deep with Donovan Bennett, 11 a.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. When we come back, Peter King, as The Fan Drive Time continues, Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Blake Murphy. And last night was perfect moment for picture-in-picture. Grey Cup game on one screen and Chiefs-Chargers in the Sunday Nighter on the other. Although the Grey Cup game was over about halftime of the Sunday Nighter, as the Chiefs improved to 8-2. Patrick Mahomes is now unbeaten in divisional road games in his career. This was supposed to be the year that the AFC West proved difficult. Not so. Let's talk to Peter King of NBC Sports and Football Morning in America. Peter, happy Monday. Yeah, like there's so much about this sport that we cannot predict that is different year to year. It feels like that's the one thing that we have that's the most dependable thing. It's the Mahomes Chiefs.
Well, look, I mean, I cannot predict why they would play the Grey Cup in Saskatchewan after dark. I guess it's all the almighty TV ratings, but I was thinking of that last night when I heard about it, and I said, man, it must have been, and I realized we're Fahrenheit and you're Celsius, but I can safely predict that it was probably pretty friggin' cold.
Yeah, it was actually like, it was like a balmy, like, I don't know, it was like 30 degrees for Regina. They were wearing short sleeves. They're hardy folk out
there. Wow.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy. Yeah, you know, the thing about Mahomes is, I was saying this to somebody today. I said, look, every year, you know what we try to do? We try to say, well, you know, Josh Allen, he's the new guy. Or Lamar Jackson, he's the new guy. Oh, here comes Joe Burrow to challenge Mahomes for his throne. I mean, Mahomes is the best. He just is the best. And the way I kind of look at this is that there's no harm. There's no, you know, you're not being a bad fan if you just simply accept the fact that, you know, right now the state of the art in offensive football in the NFL is Andy Reid calling it and Patrick Mahomes executing it with some help from his friends like Travis Kelce.
So when it comes to that Mahomes-Kelsey combination, I know you wrote about in your column this week that they basically, not exactly the same play, but they more, for the casual eye, they ran the same play that they'd beaten them with before, which I find a little fascinating because there's a little bit of the like game theory of, well, you can't run the same play again. It's like, yeah, but they would never expect us to run the same play again. Where do you put the Mahomes-Kelsey duo in terms of duos we've seen in the NFL? And I think that plays a great jumping off point for it because, you know, not only they have ridiculous stats together over the 5 years Mahomes has been the starting quarterback, but they do have kind of that mind meld, and you add Andy Reid into the mix, and it does seem like defenses still can't figure them out.
I think the biggest thing about like Mahomes and Kelsey, Kelsey has become even more valuable now because Tyreek Hill's gone. And, you know, they gave Mecole Hardman every opportunity to be Tyreek Hill number two, you know, and he's a good player. He's just not a great player. And so I think now when you look at who the Kansas City what the Kansas City offense is, it's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes figuring out, even when they have a bunch of injuries and everybody seems to get hurt and nicked up with the exception of Kelsey. And he clearly is the most valuable guy to me. I'll tell you what I find interesting about Mahomes and Kelsey right now. Kelsey is now, I think, 135 yards away from his seventh consecutive 1,000-yard season. Now, you might say, oh, well, you know, numbers are inflated these days. Well, I mean, Jason Witten played 18 years and he had 2,000-yard seasons. You know, Tony Gonzalez, played 17 years, and he had 4,000-yard seasons. So, I mean, this is unbelievable. When I was talking to, this sounds really, really brown-nosy, but I meant it, and I wanted to tell him because, look, I don't know Kelsey well, but I know him well enough. And, you know, I said to him before we get off the phone, I said, hey, listen, I just wanted to tell you, I was watching this game tonight, watching you, and I just said to myself, if this is it for Travis Kelsey, if this is last year, he is an absolute walk-in Pro Football Hall of Famer. And he was like, he was sputtering. He was a little speechless. He goes, wow. He said, hey, thanks. You say that. I can't say that. And I said, well, I am going to say it. I don't expect you to say it. I just wanted you to know that for somebody who's watched football for 38 years, you're pretty freaking good. And he just laughed and said, see you later. But I have a great appreciation for players and teams who can do it consistently and do it well, even when the other team knows it's coming. And so, like, that's one of the reasons why this story today that I wrote, I think, is kind of extraordinary. Brandon Staley is a wonder boy of defensive football. They haven't really played like that, his team, but he got hired because he built the number one defense in football in 2020 with the Rams. And so he's highly respected in the business. And Andy Reid ran the same play on two consecutive biggest plays of the game against the biggest rival that Kansas City has in the division. Both were successful and both were touchdowns. So, you know, I don't know. I'm pretty impressed by that.
Me too. And in addition to the Kelsey 7 years in a row, potentially with 1,000 yards, he's also very, very close, under 150 yards away from becoming the 51st player to have 10,000 receiving yards in NFL history. So some pretty elite company there. In the AFC, you know, it looks like the Chiefs are the top of the pile, but there are 9 teams with a positive point differential. You look over in the NFC and there's barely a team that is over the break even mark in terms of point differential. Not that it's everything, but we see the Vikings get hammered by the Cowboys last night. The Vikings now 8-2 with a -2 point differential on the season. The Cowboys now looking like a team that, yeah, maybe lost a couple games they could have won, but maybe close to the top of that NFC pecking order. What did you make of that kind of overcorrection for the Vikings and where the Cowboys stack up there?
Well, you know, it's so weird to watch the Cowboys play football. And again, I'm going to say something negative about them before I say two things positive. But when you lose a game to Green Bay the way they lost it, blowing a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter over a team that hasn't played great offensively all year, when you blow a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter, that's bad. So just because they beat Minnesota 40-3, that doesn't erase the stench of the previous week. And look, everybody can lose a game in the NFL. It's totally, absolutely understandable. So there's no shame in losing a game, but I would just be careful in saying that because the Cowboys, you know, won a game 900-0 against a team that had been 8-1, that they're all of a sudden a Super Bowl favorite. Now, having said all that, I think one of the things that has really impressed me in the last 4 to 5 weeks, everybody knows that Micah Parsons, healthy, is the hardest defensive player to account for other than Aaron Donald in the sport of pro football. So, you know, I thought he was fantastic yesterday. I wrote my column today that, you know, he had the most pressures that he's ever had in his career. Now, it's only a year and a half of his career, but he had 10 significant pressures on Kirk Cousins in this game, and they just could not block him. So that's one thing. But the other thing, you know, the Cowboys have been so myopically focused on getting Ezekiel Elliott to be the standard bearer for that offense. They paid him. They want him to be the big guy and all that stuff. And Ezekiel Elliott obviously is a very good back, but Tony Pollard is a more difficult back for defenses to prepare for, period. And he showed it in that game yesterday. One long touchdown pass. He ran the ball well. He had a 100-yard receiving game, the first of his career. He's one of the best weapons in football. So as long as the Cowboys realize that they've got to take advantage and get Pollard at least 30 snaps a game, I think that they're going to be a significantly better offensive team than we saw earlier in the year.
Well, and they may get some reinforcements in the receiving game as well, as Odell Beckham Jr., I guess, is going to this game on Thanksgiving in Dallas, and he's going to pay a visit to both the Giants, his former team, and the Cowboys. And Giants would feel like an odd choice, but I suppose if they come up with a victory over the Cowboys, you got to give them a leg up in that division. Of course, the Cowboys have already lost the Eagles, but that was with Cooper Rush at quarterback. Like, are we making too much of a big deal about this Odell Beckham Jr. thing? I guess we got to see how he looks on the field, but it does feel like almost like the balance of power in the NFC is residing in his hands.
Here's my biggest thing about Odell. All right, so he had a torn ACL in the 2020 season when he was in Cleveland. And it took him a solid year to come back and to be playing well. He tears the same ACL again, and that happened in mid-February. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he had his surgery either the last week of February or the first week of March. So let's just look at that right now and say, where are we exactly in terms of Odell Beckham's readiness? He says he's ready. What else is he going to say? Mm-hmm. Anyway, he says he's ready, but just think about it for a second. Last time it took him a year, it happens again. And are you expecting him to be able to play football well 9 months after doing it a second time? I'm not. I'm not listening to any optimistic thing about him passing his physical or anything. When he plays and he plays well and he has a great impact, then I'll say, okay, he's back. And I don't mean to be Mr. Negative about this, but every player always says, yeah, I'm in great shape. I can do whatever. It's great. My rehab is wonderful. And then they get on the team, and all of a sudden you don't see him for 3 weeks. So let's just see what happens. I think it is a mistake to automatically think that Odell Beckham comes in and he's catching 6 balls a game for 108 yards and a touchdown. It might happen, but ample evidence from past ACL survivors, rehabbers, says that you don't come back that fast to a very high level of performance from that injury.
We'll see. Cowboys players certainly believe that he's an impact player. Everybody on Twitter is trying to court him towards their team.
I'm trying to get him on the Jaguars, too.
Good luck with that. Peter, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it. Take care.
You too. There's Peter King, NBC Sports Football Morning in America. Before we take a break, the Sucker Report is brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. So full slate of games at the World Cup today, as we mentioned, after Qatar's rough showing in their debut match yesterday, getting smoked by Ecuador 2-0, which flattered them. Today was the Netherlands with a late goal to open up the scoring, beaten Senegal 2-0. The United States controlling play against Wales early on and then taking a bad penalty. And Gareth Bale converting. So that one finished in a 1-1 draw.
And then, you know, the weird wrinkle of at that late, late, late stage in penalty time, you take that kind of tactical foul. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is, but basically they're in a situation where, foul. It saves you the game.
Yeah. Well, okay. So the
borderline saves you the game.
Yeah. United States throw away a couple of points there, and England smashing Iran 6-2. Tomorrow, Saudi Arabia go into their matchup against Argentina as +2200 underdogs. Argentina -670 favorites. Denmark, Tunisia, Mexico, Poland, France, and Australia. And this Soccer Report was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. Also, Canada playing Belgium, as you well know, opening up their tournament on Wednesday at 2.
Mexico, Poland, good game to keep an eye on, just as we try to, before we see Canada against a non-CONCACAF team, to see how teams they played against measure up. And that was the case with the U.S. obviously looking good until late against Wales, and we'll get to see. Mexico-Poland is as close to a coin flip game as there's been so far in this World Cup opening round based on the betting odds. They're almost dead even.
Yeah, Mexico +175, Poland +190. Also today, John Herdman playing coy with his injury situation.
I like that he keeps doing that, and Davies is just like, no, I'm playing.
Yeah, I fully expect Alphonso Davies to play, Stefan Eustachio to play, and Milan Borjan is the new guy that's on the injury report. I think all three are going to be just fine.
The Borjan one is at least concerning just because the presumed backup is not there as well. Now, James Sharman told us last week that, you know, first of all, you probably don't have to worry about your backup unless it's a kind of a everything, things are going wrong anyway, but now you'd be, you know, on paper the down to your third string option in net. So the Borjan one is at least one to, I don't know, my anxiety level's higher on that one just because of the drop off in the position there. Maybe
we'll see. Eric Swanson, new Blue Jays righty, next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.